Hola, hola, my name is Ricardo. I am the host of the Lucha Jobbers podcast here in the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. We are a Spanish-speaking show dedicated to discussing and analyzing pro wrestling from all across the world. From AEW to CMLL, we talk about American wrestling, Japanese wrestling, and of course, Lucha Libre. If something big happened in the pro wrestling world, we will talk about it. So if you know Spanish or have a friend that knows Spanish or want to practice your Lucha Libre pronunciations, go listen to the Lucha Jobbers podcast right here in the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. Nos vemos por ahí.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So far, the rain is a gun. Fire,
back to Open the Voice Gate for October 3rd, 2023. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate podcast feed on all podcast platforms and applications. And you can follow us on Twitter. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box that says sponsor this podcast and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joining alongside, as always, KS Lowe. In case I did not bring this up intentionally as we were talking about my soil issues, my literal soil issues, but I think I tried what I think is the most disgusting Coke variant this weekend.
Okay.
Y3000? Have you seen Y3000 about anywhere?
I believe so. Let me do a quick Google here just to make sure I've seen this. And yes, I have. Yes, I have.
It's supposed to be Coke from the future. And I think that Coke now is just applying labels on it because I feel like it tasted just like the Dreamworld one that you had me try that one time.
Yeah, that's what I thought they had just redone the Dreamworld. I didn't realize this was something new.
Yeah, like the one thing I'll say is instead of it being like Dreamworld had like that kind of cherry vanilla taste to it that was not necessarily this was one created by artificial intelligence allegedly, and it was like a weird dreamsicle kind of thing, but not really good at all. I'm looking to see what they how they describe this here. It was made by insights gathered both by human and artificial intelligence that helped inspire the unique Y3000 experience.
Sounds terrible. That sounds like a bunch of corporate mumbo jumbo.
Yeah. This website, which looks like an AI website, is saying that allegedly it's supposed to have hints of chai tea. I love chai tea. Did not get that whatsoever.
I do not love chai tea, but now that you've brought this up, I will, of course, be giving this a shot, and I will be reporting back.
Yep. I'm interested in seeing what you have to say about it. It's one of the ones that I saw this at CVS, and I was like, well, damn, I've got to try it. And did not make it past my car ride back home.
That's not too bad.
It that far. But we are here this week talking about Dragon Gate as finally October is here. And not to editorialize too much, Case, I think we could probably put September 2023 behind us. And Dragon Gate probably does as one of the, I think, if not one of the more boring months, but also one of the most dissatisfying months in recent Dragon Gate years. We're in October. That's great because we have coming up ahead this week. We have Bayadin on Thursday, Corkin on Friday, and then Gate of Origin on Monday. Do you think we've finally escaped this bad September?
I hope so. You know, it's kind of two sides of the coin and neither side is good. You know, on one side, you can look at it as a very boring month where not a lot happened other than establishing a main event program, which we'll talk about and that I think Dragon Gate deserves a lot of credit for. On the other, you know, one of the most cursed months in history. You know, I don't remember if Minorita got hurt. I think he got hurt mid-August, but we'll lump him into this conversation. You lose Minorita, who was a champion. You now lose Fuda, at least for a short period of time. Nagano, it seems like, for an extended period of time. And that is without addressing the elephant in the room, the TN Revolution injury, which, it's one of the most depressing things I've ever heard in the context of Dragon Gate. It is really, really bad news. And the statement that was sent out from the Dragon Gate English account, you know, it's probably not fair to editorialize and assume subtext in digital word, but that wasn't a cheery, he's going to be out for some time message. You know what I mean? Like that was bad news all the way around.
Yeah. And from a company that usually the most they will say is one of these kind of things. It is something where you compare and contrast that Kaito Nagano, they're already saying like, hey, at the very least, he signed for a match on the 20th. He's not going to be on the match. Very clearly hurt his shoulder in the last few minutes of the D-Courage versus Rookie Selection Triangle Gate tournament match. But it is something that when you look at this and the way that Revolution went down and the way that everything has been kind of quiet for the last week, and to the extent that I did not hear an update from anyone leading up to this case, did you?
No.
Yeah. And the fact that we did, this is, unless there is something where the swelling made it seem better than it was, which I don't think that's what it is, to be honest here. Like, and that's just me just guessing. I just can't look at this as anything other than, hey, maybe I don't expect to see Tien for the remainder of this year after seeing that.
No, I think the people that you and I normally talk to, they're eager to talk when the news isn't as bad as it seems. And it's been largely radio silence on this one. I think everybody is in, it's a grim affair over there over this.
At least with the Fuda thing, like I watched the entire show with that. I think like, okay, let me see when Fuda like jacks his hand up. And it was one that like, there's been no announcements about Fuda. He's not on the Corkin card, but it is something where maybe it is hoping to get him through Monday in his hometown before going like, okay, he's going away again for a little while. Like, that's my guess right now.
That's the hope. You know, Dragon did a lot of good in the direction of Ryo Fuda over the month of September. That's one of the few positives we can take away from this. I really thought they came close to hitting a home run with him on the show that he got hurt. I thought he was awesome in Kobe Sambo Hall this past weekend. And, of course, you know, now he's down with a hand injury. So hopefully he can make it back for Gate of Origin and have that Brave Gate match.
Yeah, I just now saw it was posted a couple days ago, like during the weekend, like almost right after the show from Kobe Sambo Hall this weekend, that he was pulled from the show and Mie. He had a match with Kai announced. And then soon after, the Corkin card, the full Corkin card at least, was announced and he was left off of it. It's something with like Fuda. I look at this as kind of like a, oh man, really? Whereas Nagano's thing, I guess we're doing injuries up top, but Nagano's shoulder injury, I felt like in Kobe coming off like of a double dropkick kind of thing, he toughed it out, like probably to his detriment, but it was something that one has to wait and how things have been with people's shoulder injuries in this company that I'm not super optimistic about it either.
Well, that's the painful part of all of this is, you know, Tien gets hurt on a stomp. Nagano gets hurt on a drop kick. These guys aren't going out there and dropping themselves on their head or doing risky dives to the floor and getting hurt that way. We're talking about basic things. And they are being met with the worst possible scenario, seemingly on every show now, there's something new. And that is taxing. You know, it's one thing, again, when, you know, you see Ben Kay take a knee to the face and he gets knocked down. You go, okay, Ben's going to be gone for some time, you know, but he'll be okay. And then you just, you know, again, Nagano, I've got my eyes laser focused on this match to see when he gets hurt. And it's on a drop kick. And it's just like, oh my God. Like, I'm not mad at him. I'm not disappointed with him. It's just one of those things where you look up at the universe and you think, oh my God, is this really what we're doing right now? You know, Tien wasn't bad enough. Minorita wasn't bad enough. We're going to lose this guy to a drop kick. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And it's with Nagano being at this spot where, I mean, like, the topic of Nagano has been like, where has he been? You know, like, not taking those steps. Like, I remember a couple weeks ago, in case, when's the last time you've seen a Space World? And yeah, it was something that it felt like that this match in a lot of ways was I thought like his performance in that match was not necessarily like the highlights that we were seeing like through his first few months on the roster, but it was something that I feel like a lot of his shakiness kind of was improving to that point. And then, you know, just dropkick, something that even at his point of career, he's probably done hundreds of in practice, you know?
Yeah, for those that haven't seen the match, he dropkicked Madoka Kakuta off the apron, and then he just somehow fell directly onto his shoulder. I mean, it's one of those, he could do this again, he could do this 100 times, 99 times, he's going to roll out like normal. In this one, he just somehow took all of his weight directly onto his shoulder.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, and I think that it's a situation that when you, like, at least with Revolution, we knew that he was one of the few things happening in September, like, that there was going to be movement on him and probably around him. You couple that with Nagano, who maybe not unit-wise with at least how the company has moved over recent years, but ready for that kind of step, and then Fuda getting that push. And I think that when you look at it in concert, it just kind of, like, takes you back, and it gives you shows like, well, what we're going to see on Friday. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, you know, when a lot of things were based around these kids and they get hurt, then we're back to the Triangle Gate, and then the now officially announced Kakuta versus Shimizu at Gate of Destiny, the build to that. So it's just one of those things that I was really hoping to get some unit movement for the future kids by the end of this year. And it just seems like by hook or by crook, it's not happening.
Yeah, especially in the case of Fuda, it seems like, all right, we got to do something with him now. You know, for so long, he was the lowest ranked guy on the roster, and I don't think I'd put him there now. I think he's elevated himself. Even if it's, say, just above Daiki and Tanaka, it's still movement, and he's got a title match coming up. It would be nice to see him be able to find his way into a unit. What I think is really important is, if you notice, when these young guys are still out there, the seconds, let's say it's a Yoshiki Kato match, the seconds are Nagano and Tanaka and Daiki and occasionally Fuda and occasionally Junior.
Junior's been out a lot more than someone in his card position has needed to be.
Yes, and if I were Dragon Gate booking, I would be challenging myself to, by the end of the year, make that kaput. Make sure that Junior is solely aligned with whether it's M3K or a young guy's unit. Make him a part of that and only a part of that, and get these young guys broken up. Get them doing something, whether it's with Yamato and Dragon Kid and Doi and Punch. I don't care what it is. Get them doing something.
Yeah, and it's something that now eyes go to Tanaka, eyes go to Daiki, and eyes go to Kato. Like that's like kind of how it's like such a wild thing, thinking about the future project and the way that, like, before New Japan was starting to get their dojo refilled, Dragon Gate was several years of producing these guys, and it's something.
And for those that don't know, how did New Japan replenish their dojo?
Oh, by taking away their anachronistic size policy.
And by mimicking what company?
Dragon Gate.
Yep. Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Yeah, but it is something that with like Dragon Gate debuting 4, 6, 3 and enough that you would see a roster, and I think there's like pretty good delineation points now of post 2018 Dragon Gate era, Torimon era. Like, it's something where, like, there is, if we went through and kind of put them in their groups, I think we'd find a relatively a somewhat of a balance. But it is something that with these, all these kids, and I know that we've gone down the list of them so many times before, I would love for somehow to actually get everyone healthy at the same time. It just feels like that has not been something that's been possible.
No, I actually think we talked about that at the beginning of the month, that, oh my God, these guys are finally all healthy at the same time. And yeah. Forget that.
Right, yeah. So forget that. Forget what might be happening with the rookie selection in the Triangle Gate tournament. They obviously were going to lose to D-Courage, but it was one of those things that took the wind out of the sails getting out of that show. Not the only things happening from this Kobe show from the 30th. The main event was the last match in Big Boss Shimizu versus Reiwa Generation Leaders, as Big Boss Shimizu overcome the 2023 King of Gate and the last man to defeat him in a singles match, Kota Minora winning with the shot put slam immediately afterward, making the challenge for his hometown in Osaka. Gate of Destiny main event has been set. And Case, how do you feel now that I'm not going to bring up anymore, but what if they don't do it in Osaka?
I'm thrilled. You know, this is the right decision. Now, there are problems with this match that we can address, but big picture, just looking at it head on, I think they've nailed the build to this. You know, I think Shimizu feels hot. I think this is the best run of Shimizu's career, and I'm curious to know if you think otherwise. And this has been a six-month story in an era when you think about, you know, for how long Ryo Saito has been booking Dragon Gate now, it's a lot of month-to-month, maybe 2 months, and really some of the longer-term feuds have been like lighthearted. Like, I think about like Dragon Daya versus Don Fuji and stuff like that was spread out over the course of a few months. This is a 6 month program that was set up in May at a Big Five show and is now gone throughout the very least November of this year. And I think every step along the way has been super entertaining. So I am into this match, the Dreamgate match in November. I loved Shimizu versus Minora and Kobe. Not as good as their King of Gate final, but a match that I went 4 stars on. And I think Shimizu's the right guy for this moment. I really like the work that he's been doing.
Yeah, I largely echo. I was 4.25, but I was 4.5 on the King of Gate match. I think everything they've done with Shimizu, I don't think you could say without being a liar that they haven't protected him, kind of babied him every step along the way. Very reminiscent about babying Kakuta to the finish line at Dead or Alive. And it is something that, they've gotten to that point with Shimizu where it is something that on May 5th, it was an obvious slight for him to be used as like, no, you are not on this level. We are on this level. And just showing it over the last 5 months. And I think it's something where when we get to Ideon Arena, it's something where I think I'm now fully aboard the fact that just because, well, like when you have a title program, you have to look on the other side of the coin. Kakuta's dead in the water. Like, I think it's like there's no momentum to him at this point. It is something where it's not like a big step back. The story was told he made that step and opened the door to that new era, but I don't think you could look at anything that they've done on one side of this title feud and be satisfied with it, frankly. It is something that everything with Shimizu, exactly. And if it is something that they have been setting up, that's been spending the 6 months, essentially is the entirety of Madoka Kakuta's title run to prepare everyone for the Shimizu title run. That's all right. I get it. You told the story with Kakuta, but I don't have to it is something like that. It feels like in this, now that everything's kind of come to the head, that they could have done more with Kakuta in the meantime while Shimizu was on this road, right?
I agree with that. And I think big picture, this is my complaint with the match. My stance on Kakuta's Dreamgate run, have the matches been as great as we would want them to be? No, they have not. I also think he hasn't been put in a position to succeed. You go back to the Yoshioka match, this odd babyface versus babyface battle of respect match that nobody really connected with.
You go to the Minoru match, and they kind of both worked as a babyface. Like, it was very awkward because Minoru had this great run to the title. He beats Yoshioka in this heroic hometown match. He beats Shimizu, where he's obviously the smaller guy. And then again, you're in this position where Kakuta and Minoru were almost working at both like tweeners. Like, neither of them wanted to commit one way or another. And now my fear is that we've built Shimizu up, and all logic is saying Shimizu should be the babyface. Think about the Ben K match in Corken Hall. Shimizu worked underneath for about 12 minutes straight. This guy was getting decimated and dominated by Ben K, and he's the one that made the fiery babyface comeback. And that has been a reoccurring theme in all of these Shimizu singles matches. Logic would say, okay, Shimizu's going to his hometown. He is the guy who's been working underneath. He's going to be the babyface here. The problem is that D-Courage now exists as the ultra babyfaces in Dragon Gate. They are, as we've said a number of times, the main characters in this promotion. They're the guys that sell the merch. They're the guys that have the longest meet and greet lines. They're the guys that ultimately people care about. They are the hometown, home team, rather, babyfaces. They are Dragon Gate. They are representing this company more than anybody else. It's going to be awkward for Kakuta to position himself as a heel, but I also think that's exactly what he has to do. They could run into, despite 6 months of doing the right thing and getting to the right match in the right building, which I was very concerned they wouldn't do, they are now still being met with the problem that Kakuta had in July and then he had in August. And I think if he would have had a defense in September or October, he might have had that same issue. I don't know how to solve this.
Yeah, and it is something I think with that and talking about Kakuta, some of it is that where were the heels? Like, you beat Shun, you were not going to go back to Shun. No one else in Z-Bratz other than Kai you could have put to that level. And unless you were going to do the turns, it just feels like that the company went babyface versus babyface at a time where it now you're looking at doing it again, and without like any sort of like pull, I guess it just kind of at a certain point, I don't know what the point is, you know, kind of like if it's babyface versus babyface at this and your heel units are just basically kind of doing the same old thing, then shouldn't we blow this up and relook at D-Courage? Because we're now at a point with them as main characters. And I think that you look at the crowd, you talk to the people, and you look at how the company has gone, going with D-Courage as the main character has made sense for the last 18 months. I think that it was the right first step before really solidifying the new generation leaders. But it is something now that we've really had to come to terms with, the fact that when you look at the landscape, when you look at the frontline players, it's all so heavily babyfaced. That it's something where maybe if you were able to have a couple more heels, like maybe throw the money at Ada, get him to do a six week program building up to Oda City or Sendai. Just give something there, because at this point when it's going to be Shimizu versus Kakuta in Osaka, I don't know how the crowd is going to like really get behind Kakuta as a heel when they've been given no reason to, or like nothing of the reason why I say like there's not been enough face and heel matchups. I just to kind of go to that is that there it's not engendering any sort of emotion at a point where you're able to do the flip. Like that's one of the things about Doi and Yamato is that they had the ability to they have the abilities to do that. And I don't know if Kakuta does, because we haven't really presented him a battlefield of which for him to kind of get that level of support.
I made the argument in June when the match between Kakuta and Yoshioka was booked that this should start the fragment of D-Courage, Yoshioka should lean heel, and Yoshioka should eventually turn heel. I thought D-Courage had served their point up to that point for 18 months, 12 months just about with Kakuta. And I felt like we were ready for something new. Do I think they're an active detriment to the promotion? No, I do not. But I also think we're in a point now where the promotion is almost being held hostage by these rigid babyfaces when their babyface champion is wrestling nothing but other likable babyfaces. We're in a very awkward spot here. You know, I would hope, and I can ask you this on October 3rd, a month out from the match,
Who do you think is going to win, Kakuta or Shimizu? Who do you think is going to win? Who do you think should win?
The answer to all three of those are Shimizu. Mm-hmm. Like, frankly, I don't know. Like other than the idea that you do some turns, I guess. But if Daya turns heel, he's not a Dream Gate challenger. Like, you don't really have, like, that added thing here. If Yoshioka turns hard heel, you might be able to get some sort of emotion there. And I think when you've gone babyface versus babyface for so long, you need to have a heel reaction at a certain point. And here's something that I've been thinking about today, Case, that I wasn't ready to do this today, but I am going to plop this on you.
Okay, I'm like, ready to be plopped.
And I feel like that this, in a lot of ways, kind of gets to the real point here. For all we know, and inside and outside, we're on the same page about this. For all we know, Ryo Saito is the primary booker.
Yes.
And has been the primary booker since the August of 2021, if I'm right.
Yes.
Like, right after Yoshino's retirement. So now he's had a full 2 years, 26 months. Do we think he's doing a good job as a booker at this point? Because I think that's kind of what this is. Like, we look at how the units are. We look at how the Dreamgate has been booked over the last 2 years, and even a little bit leading up to Ryo Saito taking over that role officially. But I think we could say that tendency that was shown in 2021 reared its head again the next straight year. So I think we can draw a conclusion there or draw an inference. But I don't know if Ryo Saito is a good booker. And it is something where I look at the landscape and I'm kind of coming to the thing that I don't know if his booking is actually helping out the promotion anymore.
Okay, let's really slow this down and look at this from a few different angles. You know,
I told you I'd plop this on you.
This is good. This is, you know, I'm okay with it being plopped. This also could have been 10 hours of research, but we're going to fly by the seat of our pants here because that's more fun. So if we go back to August of 2021, is there a single iconic moment that comes to mind in the same way as, and I'll use the example of Shingo turning on BB Hulk in 2008, doing the dance and hitting the exploder suplex? I think you and I both recognize that as an A-level, top-tier Dragon Gate angle in history. One of the most memorable moments there's ever been. Off the top of your head, and there's a very strong chance that you and I are going to forget some of these moments because, again, we're doing this, you know, as we're discussing it, we're sort of fleshing this out. Do you think there's been at least one of those moments in the last 2.5 years?
Yes, I would say the 12-1-2021. I would say the double mask versus mask tag match with Dragon Daya losing. I think that was the clearest thing to a end of World 1 kind of emotional moment.
I think that's a great poll. I would throw that in there, and I would throw the cage match from this year at World. I think that is something that people are going to remember for a very, very long time. I mean, the match you referenced, I've never been more stunned by a finish in my entire life. You know, I think it might be up there as the single most shocking moment in Dragon Gate history, the cage match, whereas sort of the evolution of that feud, because a lot of it can be tied back there, it was the right result. It was the satisfying result. It was everything that we expected, and it delivered as such. So at the very least, you can give him two iconic moments. Do any more come to mind before I continue my line of questioning?
I would say that you have the cage match. Those two are that the one that I would say not to that level, but I think for the real ones, it is was the surprise debut of Mochizuki Jr.
Mm. Yeah, that caught me off guard. I was not ready for that when that happened.
But out of like grand emotive moments that if we want to look at Ryo Saito's turn, there's been a couple of them. I think that's fair to say. It's something that he's been able to at least capture the heightened drama that we've seen throughout the remaining 23 years of the promotion. Yes.
What do you think about the match quality? Compare it to different eras if we want to look at, you know, the beginning of the promotion in Toriumon, the early years of Dragon Gate, the late 2000s, you know, when you have the big six coming to fruition. You have, say, a golden era there of 2013 to 2016.
the era after that, and then sort of Saito's era, where would you rank the match quality historically?
I think that it is kind of something where the match quality might be a shade off, but it is something that I don't know if we can purely attribute that to Saito. I think there's a lot of other things that kind of happen with it. It's not that I disagree with this being made a point. It's just that I think that when you've looked at how the roster has changed, that has also influenced that somewhat too.
Yeah, you know, it's a deal where I guess let me phrase it to you this way. Do you think, I don't know how I want to ask this. I do think Saito is responsible for it to a degree, because Saito is obviously the one putting together matches. And I guess my larger point here is, I actually think this has been a relatively healthy match quality point for the company in its history. I think it's certainly better than, say, 2007 to 2010, maybe 2006 to 2010. It's stronger than the very early days of Toriumon, just simply because there's guys with more experience on the roster. And I also think it's better than that 2017 to late 2018, basically 2017 through Pac's return. I think it's better than that, and I think that's partially by way of Saito putting forth really strong matches on paper, those matches delivering. The difference is, it doesn't peak as high as 2003 Toriumon. It doesn't peak as high as 2005 Dragon Gate. It doesn't peak as high as 2013 through 2016 Dragon Gate. And I think that is what a lot of people, Western fans, are hung up on.
Yeah, and I should say it's a shade less, but also acknowledging the fact that over his tenure, I've had more, I almost said more five-star matches, and I realized, no, RED, loser must disbands, happened technically before he was GM. So, yeah, like, it's something where I think that a lot of how, at least entering Dragon Gate, has kind of gotten to, it has been a little bit, if I would say one thing, kind of a correction to how things were changing in the company 2018, 2019, and it does feel, not necessarily like a full like return to tradition in ways, but it does feel like, I would say that the tenor of the ring style has kind of, I don't want to call it like, I feel like I'm almost like sniffing my own farts by describing it this way. I don't want to call it neoclassical Toriumon, but it is one of those things where you see the point I'm trying to make though.
Yes, I do. You know, it's an interesting era. I'll ask you this finally, as we sort of discuss Saito. I have one more question after this, but in terms of units, in the last 18 months, or two years, have there been iconic units in the history of Dragon Gate that have taken place during this time period?
This is where I think I'll get people mad at me. And okay. It's something where with some of the other stuff we'll talk about later on in the program, I've have been kind of looking backwards at units that now we have 5-6 years distance. Outside of Natural Vibes, I am not confident that any of these units will have the kind of nostalgia. I think Natural Vibes longevity, and looking at like just the people who came through it and how it's really kind of elevated the roster, we'll look back at Natural Vibes fondly. I think that their legacy is cemented. M3K will get lumped
I want to stop you there with Vibes real quick. That is absolutely a testament to Saito's regime, Saito's era, for making Natural Vibes feel fresh and urgent. Losing Genki, losing Susumu, adding Shimizu, adding Strong Machine J, finding the right use for Jason and Jackie at different times. That is absolutely a credit to him, at least during this era.
And I would say probably one of the biggest credits. But I think you look at the rest of the unit landscape over the last few years, M3K will be rolled into whatever thoughts we have about the overall M2K legacy. I think that it's just naturally like, this is the fourth M2K. Like, we have to acknowledge the fact that it is in part of a continuity. Outside of that, I think that personally, I have found myself less interested by the heel units over the last 26 months. I think that one of the things that the booking has gone to that has really handcuffed the roster and handcuffed the shows is by having a heal unit be so small, you are basically not only restrained by the amount of matches you can do on the card and the idea that you're going to have a lot of Shades of Grey baby faces out there if you don't have a big enough heal unit to make it work, or baby faces that are willing to show Shades of Grey. Don't think we've seen any of that whatsoever over the last 2 years. But when you have like Zebrats at a point where it's four guys and you could do basically a singles match with Ishin and then the three caps names guys in a trios, I think that that is something that, yeah, SBK, and that's unfortunate. But going all the way back, Case, how long have I said Zebrats is restraining the cards?
You've been on that for quite a while.
And it's something that when you look at the other units, I mean, let's us forget Team Boku being a recent thing. Like, there's been a lot of kind of ephemeral units. Like, Kung Fu Masters has been like a fun thing. We've kind of kept them in that box. But high end,
I would argue not enough is being done with Kung Fu Masters. Right. I really like their match in Kobe.
Yeah, no, like it's something where like that's the problem with Kung Fu Masters is, well, how much is too much Kung Fu Masters? I think we both would argue you could probably turn off. We could probably have a little bit more Kung Fu Masters on these cards. But
I was just on the Gaiora website, the shop, and I was like, do I want a Kung Fu Masters T-shirt? I really like the work they do.
Yeah, but. When you like, so you have that, but then you have what I think when we get into Dragon System 25 next year, Case, one of the things I'm going to throw on you is make a list on like some dead week, make a list of your five worst units all time. High end might be threatening over generation and Deep Drunkards is number one.
Oh, they're not number one. I mean, you have over generation, you have elevated for people. That.
Yeah, Antios is going to be like, I like the fact that Antios exists because I could defend Deep Drunkards. So,
I don't know about that. No, I mean, look, high end sucked. I hated them. They were not enjoyable at all. But I wouldn't put them on that level. I mean, did Overgeneration really elevate anybody?
Oh, Lindemann?
I don't know. I feel like...
I feel like his
heel turn is where he really started to take off, and I didn't even like that heel turn because that's when he was painting his face and he had that rope with him. I wasn't into that at all, but that's when his stature in Dragon Gate certainly made it seem like he was elevated.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ishida, by the time that Overgeneration was done, Ishida became like the breath of fresh air and Maximum that was completely kind of like just Doiyoshi and Jason for a while.
Yes, but I would attribute Ishida's elevation to Maximum and not Overgeneration, which is maybe me being nitpicky, but I don't look back at Ishida's Overgeneration time and go like, oh, that was the start of something special. I think about that with him and Maximum.
And the controversial one, Overgeneration might have kind of been when Eita figured out how to be like the charismatic heel because he did the exact opposite.
Well, I mean, look, we're almost a decade removed from Overgeneration Eita, and all I've wanted for the last 8 years is 2015 Eita. That's all I've wanted.
You just want the trash bag dinosaur back.
Yeah, I just... that's
Now, that's for old listeners. That's for old listeners.
I just want Eita versus Liger and Eita versus Tozawa. It's, you know, I don't need him doing chair spots. I want him doing swanky technical moves.
Yeah. That is very true. It is something that I look at the unit landscape and I feel like that is the biggest indictment of Ryo Saito. I think that is something that we going through the last 5 weeks and seeing how constrained the cards are. And some of that has been the fact that Shin's been in America. Like, that is true. And that is something that we could talk about the positives and negatives about DG and USA now coming to almost its second year to the close almost in a weird way, but it is something that I think it's undeniable that when you have these 3-4-member units, which I think have been the trademark of unit composition under Ryo Saito, it constrains your card and makes him worse.
Okay, but with Zebrat specifically, this unit started the year with 6 guys, because it was Shun, Kai, Hyo, and Ishin, and then it was SB Kento, and it was Diamante. And it just so happened that Diamante got hurt on a Noah show this year and was forced to miss a bunch of time. So they were down to 4, because obviously SB Kento was in Mexico. And then they got Diamante back for a minute, and it looked like they were going to get Kento back, and then that didn't happen. And then they were back down to 4, and then, of course, 3 with Shun leaving for a month and a half. They were circumstantially 4 guys. I don't think that's the way they drew it up, but then you'd have to go to the unaffiliated, or to, again, maybe my idea with D-Courage and Yoshioka, you'd then have to turn somebody heel. I don't think this was drawn up on the whiteboard as a 4-person heel unit. I think unfortunate circumstances have led them there.
I think that you could very easily turn Yoshiki Kato heel, and you have a heel heater in Zebrats, and he would be at a good point for that.
Fair.
Like I understand, like, not as things haven't gone as planned, but at a certain point, like, you have to kind of book with your back against the wall and kind of do that. And I don't know, with having Zebrats at 4, Gold Class at 4, D-Courage at 3, M3K at 4, that really has helped out anyone when you have these restrained things. Like, why not have Don Fuji go zombie veteran again? Like, that is one thing that when they were able to adjust to things in the past, we saw Doidarts and zombie veterans going into Matt Blanky. Like, they've shown the flexibility to adapt to this before, but instead they've stood pat, and I think it's been to the active detriment of the company.
So I'm going to ask you a very subjective question, because I think for everybody the answer is going to be a little bit different, but let's look at where Dragon Gate is now, and let's look at where it was 10 years ago. And if you really want to get in depth with this exercise, we can go back to 2003 as well. Do you think this era of Dragon Gate has less fun than previous eras of Dragon Gate? Because going back to Zombie Fuji as a heel, that made me think of this.
Yeah, funness is kind of one of those things that I think maybe with a lot of the departures, it's been hard for the company to be fun, to be as fun as it was before.
There's just, it's odd, because there are things that I wish Dragon Gate did more of, complicated multi-man matches, a lot of rules, a lot of different, styles of being. I think they've gone back to some over-the-top gimmicks, even if they're presented more so in a clear Ultimo Dragon presentation than in maybe, a Shima presentation. It's just odd, because some of the things that I miss from Dragon Gate are now happening in Gleet, and I watch them there, and I go, oh, well, this feels dated, this feels off, and I don't know if it's just an example of everything in Gleet, feels like diet soda to me. It's just not the real thing, and so thus I'm less interested. Or if maybe the era of Nanawa style elimination matches has just passed us and wrestling has evolved past that. But I also think, no, I'd really like to see some of that stuff in Dragon Gate still. I do think this is a promotion that, for as much as I still enjoy it, for as much as I love it, I still think this year it's either the second or third best promotion in the world. I mean, no one to me is touching CMLL, but it's hard for me to differentiate Dragon Gate between AEW or New Japan. I mean, I just straight up have not liked most AEW this year. The high-end stuff is awesome. The high-end stuff is the highest-end stuff in the world, but there's been so much dreck and so much stuff that I hate in that company. I don't think I could vote for them in the top 3. In New Japan, is that to a lesser degree. The high-end stuff is incredible, but there's also just a ton of New Japan stuff that I'm not interested in. The one little sprinkle that is missing from Dragon Gate is not the match quality. It's not developing young talent. The booking, as we're discussing now, is not perfect, but they've certainly hit their mark on a few different things throughout the year. It does just feel like this year has missed, for lack of a better term, signature Dragon Gate pizzazz. And I don't know what that is. I can't put a finger on it. I can't give you a specific example, but I could certainly hear that argument that it's missing just a little bit of that.
And like you brought up Glade, I think that when you kind of see something, and maybe something that now 5 years, we kind of have to acknowledge was maybe it is something that when you had those two sides come together, you got those 15 years or those 20 years and we're able to create that. But when they're apart, it's just not the same. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I'll say this. I feel like given all the difficulties that's happening right now, at least like economy wise and all of that, I still like Dragon Gate's future. I still love the promotion. It's still like not a thing where like I've been able in the past to like get through stuff. Like AEW is a promotion now that I very much get through at this point. And I more so than not this week, I felt like that. But I wonder if a little bit of it is the fact that, you know, like when everything kind of split and shook out, like the magic kind of was like spread out and it just, you know, it's not as magical anymore. And I wonder if there is a little bit of that.
Yeah, I don't know, because I will still be the first person to shout and defend at other pundits and people in the Discord. Like, this is still an elite level promotion. It just is. It just is. I've got 54 plus star matches this year. The in-ring has been great. And there's been high-end stuff this year as well. It's just in an odd point where, you know, it constantly feels like we're waiting for dust to settle. There's an anxiousness to this promotion. You really don't know what's happening next. And I think maybe the argument can be made, okay, for so many years in Dragon Gate, for, you know, a decade plus, we didn't know where the company was going, but we trusted them. We knew there was a good driver behind the wheel. And now we don't know where they're going, and we're checking GPS on our phone going, are you sure this is where you want to be? Are you sure this is what you want to do? Are you sure this is going to be the plan? Because I think to some degree, trust has been evaporated, even if, again, I mean, God, I look back at cards from 2017 and 2018. Those were not good shows. That was a period of the promotion I have no interest in going back and watching. Whereas, you know, stuff from 2021, 2022, 2023, there's a lot of good to be found there. There's a lot of stuff that I'll feel nostalgic for in a few years. A lot of stuff I'll want to go back and rewatch. You know, it's just it's an interesting time for the company.
Yeah, and the one thing that I'll add on to it, like, it is something that when I've been like thinking about this, and I've been thinking about this for a couple of weeks, and it just was something that kind of came to head over recent days today, and I felt like, why not plop it now on a week like this? I think back to 2020 and in COVID, where even though Dragon Gate kind of was forced to go behind doors and everything was kind of like thrown up in the air, what do we do? Dragon Gate was the one company that you look at the empty arena Sambo Hall show, the empty arena one that happened after that, and then the King of Gate stuff before they went back in the crowds, and they were still going forward. I don't know. It does not feel like recently Dragon Gate has gone forward. It feels like that there has been this wait, and at least last month, I could have gone like, oh, this wait was for TN Revolution. Obviously, you can't blame that on the company. You can't blame what happened with Revolution's injury on like the booking or on anything like that. I guess for me, it is something where I feel like I've like talked to you at least privately about this for years now. Like the idea of the generation change and the specter of what is Dragon Gate as it moves into a generation of people who will have been who would not have been born when Toriumon happened. Like that's been a reality more and more on that. And maybe it is the lack of trust that I wish I had as they're going into this thing. And they're at this time where I think that there will be a Dragon Gate in 5 years, but it's going to be a company that just because of natural progression of time and people's careers. I mean, we're on a week where we're having 25th anniversary celebrations. There's a I'm not going doom and gloom here. And if it comes off as doom and gloom, I'm sorry. It's reality. This company will be drastically different in 5 years. And I just wish at this time when we're kind of preparing for that, that I felt a little bit more confident with the person at the wheel.
Yeah, look, I mean, I wish everybody could get into the mindset of adapt or die with this company specifically, because I think far too many people hold on to nostalgia and haven't been able to readjust the lens that, again, and I will reuse the phrase, this is still an elite level promotion, even if some of the faces and some of the tones have changed. Real quick, I have one more question for you in regards to this. I do want to go through the units just in my own mind real quick. You know, we both agree, I think Vibes is a gold medal
a historic unit, one that is so great that it has done good for so many different wrestlers. I am a little higher on ZBratch than you, although if you would have asked me at this time last year, I would have said they're on their way to being a historically great heel unit. I think that has dipped a little bit. Gold Class is a mess. I won't be able to properly evaluate Gold Class for a decade. You know, D-Courage is what it is. I think jury's still very much out on them and their legacy. And I will forever be the high man on M3K. I love this unit. I love what it's done for Mochi, for Susumu, for Kanda, and for Junior. And I think Saito deserves some credit there. But as we put a bow on this conversation, if you had to give a letter grade to Ryo Saito as a booker, where are you at here?
Am I allowed to do pluses and minuses?
Are yes. No, that's right. We went to America. I don't know what European schools do, but we went to the American school system. Well, plus or minus is a grade. What do you mean?
Yeah. I had a couple professors that just said there are three grades in this class, A, B, or F.
So, no. A, B, or F? No.
Grad school, man.
Oh, what a sham.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you think I decided not to go for my doctorate?
I got a girlfriend in grad school right now, and I can't believe some of the mumbo jumbo she's got to put up with.
Oh yeah. Though it would be fun to be referred to as Dr. Michael Spears on this very show. That's not the reality.
I would never do such a thing.
Yeah. It's more of me to tap myself on the shoulder for that. But letter grade.
And a proper letter grade. Here you go.
I would go B minus.
Interesting.
I'm sorry. It is something where I think that if we decided to go through the main event, we talked a little bit about it, but the main event title picture and the way that I don't think that other than Yuki Yoshioka, I don't know if anyone necessarily we can say is that much better off. Like, Shun was strong going into his second title run. Like let's not act like that it was the big elevating thing. This was kind of the thing where he needed that, and it was the right time to do that. I don't know if you would say that that the title picture merits anything higher than a B minus.
So the champions since August of 2021, it's Yamato, it's Kai, it's Yoshioka, it's Shun on that short run, and then it's Kakuta. I don't know. I didn't like that Yamato run. Because it made me a little uncomfortable. Like, we were kind of starting at ground zero after every defense. I like the Kai title change. I liked all of Kai's matches other than the Yoshida match. Yoshioka stuck the landing there. Shun stuck the landing, you know, had the match with the Yoshioka that I think I liked more than everybody else. Had the match with Strong Machine J that did its job. And then had the match with Kakuta that was great. And I think everything through Kakuta getting the belt has actually been pretty strong.
Even with Kobe World 2022.
Mm. Checkmates. No response to that. Well said. Well said. Like, that was, you're not wrong.
It's something where, like, if it was something that it was just Kakuta just feeling kind of like a lame duck, and now we're looking at like a month where he's basically holding the title hostage. If it was just that, I probably would go B to B plus. Cause I can't, like, when it's all said and done, we're going to talk about like big Dragon Gate moments. Dia losing his mask will make the top five. And I think that if it was something where the Dreamgate picture was better, we'd be talking B, B plus, but I can't act like that he booked a very strong Kobe World and that he does not have weird ideas with the Dreamgate.
No, it was my point at Kobe World was I think this is the guy who has a history now of getting too cutesy with the Dreamgate belt at certain points. You know, instead of being very direct heel versus face, he's done some odd stuff that I haven't always agreed with.
Yeah, it was just something that I felt like that coming to a head. We used to do GM Ryo Saito, how are you doing? It just felt like it was time to do a report card on a week like this one. Did you have any other really thoughts about this Kobe Sambo Hall show? It was fun, but it did not really, other than Kakuta and Ishin and Fuda deciding to have their own match. It was just a nice monthly show, it felt like.
Yeah, I do want to spend just a little bit more time on Kobe because I came into this show super down because it aired on the 30th. but I did not watch it until the day we're recording the third. And so by that point, not only had the TN injury been confirmed as something serious, but I knew it at some point on the show, Nagano was going to get hurt and Fuda was going to get hurt. And I, you know, I just life has gotten the better of me lately. I'm behind on everything. I'm behind on Lucha. I'm behind on New Japan. I'm behind on AEW. There's very little wrestling being watched in my life right now. So my finger's a little bit off the pulse. So I don't have great momentum of like, God, I just watched this one great show. Now I'm going to go watch my favorite promotion. I was just basically staring at a loaded gun going, oh my God, I have to watch this Kobe Sambo Hall show where two guys get hurt and their young prodigy is confirmed out for an extended period of time. This is going to suck. And it gets off to a slow start, but I actually really enjoyed this show. And I want to talk about the matches 4 and 5 here, just real quickly. The Z-Brats match, Yoi Shinkai and Shun versus Fuji Doi, Fuda, and Kondo first. And then we'll talk about D-Courage versus the rookies. I am so impressed with Ryo Fuda, and I have shouted it and shouted it and shouted it, and I think one day I will be proven right. This guy is just so talented. If he can stay healthy, he is going to be a very active participant in things that matter within the scope of Dragon Gate. And if he can make it to his hometown in Sendai, I think he and Ishin are going to put forth a tremendous Brave Gate match.
Yeah, it is something that Fuda and Ishin basically brawl the entire match, and it rules. And it's something where like you have the ringside brawling that eventually everyone gets back in the ring, but as soon as like Fuda leaves the ring, he goes right over to Ishin and they start smacking the shit out of each other, and it is just awesome. And during that brawl, the entire 8-man tag brawl, do you notice who Fuji went after? It wasn't against a Z-Brats guy.
No, I don't.
Oh, he went after Junior again.
I forgot about that. That's right.
Yeah. So like you had all of this like going with it, and it is something where I'm fully converted on Ryo Fuda. I think that it's something where like I always thought he had the talent. It just was I was not. I come from an era of Dragon Gate where I remember when people do poorly and then they get put in fat guy gimmicks. And it was something that like there's still something that kind of in the back of my head was going like, I don't know about this. I just don't know. But through the entire build and everything of this, they get to Sendai. It's going to be a belter. And I have all confidence that it'll be a great match.
Yeah, like I mentioned, I think it was last week, you know, Ishin and Fuda are tight behind the scenes. So I would imagine they're going to put forth an extra effort here to sort of solidify Fuda. It's funny you mentioned Don Fuji. The other thing I wanted to bring up with this match was there's a great spot where Fuda goes on this big run of offense and he knocks Ishin into the corner, and Fuda sort of starts to take a breath, to take a break. And Fuji is on the apron just telling him to go, 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 go after Ishin. And it's a perfect use of Fuji. And it's a reminder like, man, Fuda's been on an island his entire time. At best, you could say he had a loose affiliation with Kaisuke Okuda when Okuda's stock was at the very lowest. And I just think Fuda being able to match guys, literally in the sense of color coordination and having a group around him, even from a kayfabe sense, I just think that is going to do so much good for him. I really hope it happens sooner rather than later. I really like this 8-man tag.
Yeah, it's something where, you know, it's one of the things about Fuda that I think in some ways holds him back a little bit, and it's not like a bad thing. It's something that just kind of happens. You know who he reminds me of personality wise?
Who's that?
Susumu.
Okay.
He kind of has just like a even kind of disposition. He wears purple. It's one of those things where like I kind of always get a Susumu vibe for him, but this Ishin feud has really pulled out like the fact that there's no doubt Ryo Fuda wants to get his ass, and him showing anger and like this is something that at least for me is a big step forward, because I thought that he was kind of just a very just chilled out striker for a long time. You know, I needed this. I needed to see some fight with him.
Yeah, look, I love him. I'm thrilled for him. I really hope he knocks out of the park and gets healthy. As for the Open the Triangle Gate Tournament Championship match, I want to spend just a minute here. Daya Kakuta and Yoshioka versus Nagano, Tanaka, and Kato. What did you think about this from an in-ring perspective?
I was close to Notebook.
As was I.
3¾ on it.
As was I.
Yoshiki Kato is someone that I'm so glad he's back and everything is seemingly on the up and up with him, because I really enjoyed the portions with him and Kakuta.
As did I, Mike. I'm glad we talked about this because we're on lockstep here.
Yeah, it is something that Kato, he is such a different kind of person on this roster, and just physically, the fact that he towers over everyone and has like this power fighting determination that, like, it was very earned. Like, there was a deep near fall where he hit the modified blood fall on Daya, and I bought it. I was like, oh shit, the rookies that again, Kato, Miracle Kato, he's the one rookie who was able to beat anyone on this roster, and he did it. They had me for a moment.
They had me there, and then they had me with Tanaka going for a flash pin on Yoshioka, and I thought this was another really solid Tanaka outing. This was a really good match. I enjoyed this. So if you have not seen this show, watch the last three matches. I think they are all well worth your time.
Yeah, like, that's the thing about this Kobe show. Like, the first half of it, the Kung Fu Masters match, given the fact that it had Punch Tomonaga in it, over-delivered to it. You had a Royal Sambo that was randomly like M3K versus Natural Vibes to start, that was just kind of there. But when you get to match to the meat of the lineup here, I mean, three matches threatening Notebook, one match making it. I really like it. It's something that even with our consternation, I do thoroughly enjoy this promotion as much as anything else in the world. Especially when you're able to see matches like this, where you get to see a back half of the show that really, with the exception of Fuji, Kai, Kondo, and Doi, sickeningly young. Back half.
Yeah, look, I will end this by saying I think pretty confidently that Dragon Gate has had a better 2023 than AEW. Let's talk about the Buyuden show happening this week. Mike, I'm going to give you a second to pull up the card. I'm going to have you read it because I'm sure there's names on there that I can't pronounce, but this is coming up in just a few days. Shinjuku Face. This is the Masaki Mochizuki Produce shows, the third one from this year. It'll be live on the Dragon Gate Network. The first two shows were a ton of fun. I really loved the fact that they brought them back this year. I've enjoyed every one of them, and I really, really like this card on paper.
Yeah, and something that I've noticed, Case, you know who has not been pulled from this card?
Who's that?
Ryo Fuda.
Oh, boy. All right, that's good to hear.
Yeah, I will have a written review of this up for Voices of Wrestling sometime this week. It's a five-match card, a whole lot of meat to it. Opening... Ryo Kawamura from representing Pancrase in Yokohama, teaming with Punch Tomonaga versus Hikaru Sato and Ryo Fuda. That's you get DG shooters and you get actual shooters on that. Open the Ware Gate. Kikutaro defends against regular ordinary salary man Minonori Sawa. Trios match: Mochizuki Jr., Yoshiki Kato, and Ryoya Tanaka versus, and I'm reading the translation from Gayor, so I apologize if I get names wrong here, Fujimura, Ozawa, and Owada from Noah.
The Noah rookies. That is my DJ horn. I'm very excited about that match.
Yeah, there's a lot there. Speaking of Noah, Case, we have a match here for me. It's Yamato and Don Fuji, my favorite occasional Dragon Gate tag team. They're back together. They're reuniting on this one, and they're facing Takashi Sugera and Masakita Miya of Pro Wrestling Noah. Main event, Masaki Mochizuki and Fujita Jr. Hayato versus Masato Tanaka and Dragon Kid. Buyuden remains nonstop bangers.
And this is the best looking card of the three they've done this year.
Yeah, I am actually really excited to see Punch Tomonaga get like absolutely swallowed up by Hikaru Sato wearing a Virgin Killer sweater. I can't wait.
That should be fun. The rookies tag. They've got the right rookies in there. Junior, Kato, and Tanaka. And, you know, the thing with Pro Wrestling Noah, they'll never develop these guys. But as young boys, they're a lot of fun to watch. The Fujimura, Ozawa, and Iwata team. So I have very high hopes for that as well. And then before you jump in, I have to note, I can't think of two wrestlers with greater dispositions in terms of effort and presentation than Don Fuji and Takashi Sugera.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, can't you just, like, mind canon it that they were high school friends? One of them turned out to be the deadbeat. One of them kind of still is kind of a deadbeat, but made something of themselves.
Well, yeah, it's like Segura acts like he's, like, three times divorced, and Fuji just, he drowns it out. He's drinking beers in his garage, listening to sports radio.
And watching train videos.
Of course.
Yeah, no, it's just fantastic, and Masakin Amiya, I enjoy him. Like,
oh my god, yes.
Yeah, it is something here that, like, hopefully we get Cranky Yamato here just to add to it. That the thought process behind this, I don't know if I'm willing to put Masaki Mochizuki Booker of the Year, but I like the way that he's thinking on this show.
I mean, look at the main event. That is Mochi and Hayato, who Hayato for me is probably a top 50 wrestler in the world this year based on the small sample size that I've seen. All of it's been great against DK and Tanaka, which is, you know, emotional tag team if you want to get into their FMW tie-in. This is awesome. I can't wait to watch this show.
Yeah, so of course, Masato Tanaka of FMW, Dragon Kid, former FMW referee. He did death matches, not the most famous ones, but more often than not, if you saw a very undersized guy in the referee in death matches, you would see a young Dragon Kid because you got hazard pay doing those. And Atsushi Onita told him he was too small, but Ultimo said, no, you're not too small.
Ultimo said, wait, you have money? Okay, all right.
Right. Yeah,
you got hazard pay money. You know, I can give you hazard pay money too. Let's hand it over.
It's a hazard handing me the money.
Yeah. Hey, see you in Tijuana.
Yeah. So that's going to be Bayaden. It is on Thursday. That is not the only live show this weekend. We're in October. We're in the busy time. We have Gate of Victory from Tokyo on Korakuen Hall on October 6th. It is a Jomi. I have the card pull up. Jomiko,
yeah, please, please. Yep.
We open up with the Mochizukis versus Don Fuji and Yoshiki Kato. Oh yeah. Kagetora and Punch. I'm sorry, Kagetora and Problem Dragon versus Hoho Loon and Daiki Yanagiuchi, 25th anniversary memorial match, Ginki Horiguchi versus Yazushi Kanda, 25th anniversary memorial match, Susumu Mochizuki versus Kenichiro Arai, tag team match, Big Boss Shimizu and Strong Machine J versus Shuji Kondo and Eita, 8-man tag, Natural Vibes, KZ, Jason Lee, UT, Jackie Funky Kamei versus the whole complement of Z-Brats, and then the main event, the 87th Open, the Triangle Gate Champion Tournament Finals, 3-way trios match, Gold Class, Kota Minora, Benkei, Naruki Doi versus D-Courage, Madoka Kakuta, Yuki Yoshioka, and Dragon Daya versus Yamato, Dragon Kid, and Punch Tomonaga.
Good card. Good card. There should be some good stuff on this. Big picture, what are your thoughts here?
Big picture, I like a lot of the show. I'm not going to complain about revisiting Mochizuki Jr. and Don Fuji in match one, of course.
Nope.
It is. We're going to talk about the 25th anniversary matches in a minute, but I think, like, the only kind of match is match five. Like, I get, like, Shimizu because Kakuta is in D Courage, which is a 3-person unit. He has to be in the main event there, so you're not. You'll have that build coming out of that main event match. I think I might be a little higher on the show than you, other than it just kind of match five just is it's an understandable kind of eyebrow raise.
Yeah, I think I was really high on this car when it came out, and I think I still am. I have to remind myself, oh, wait a minute, no, the 8-man tag should be great, and even there's a chance that Shimizu and Kondo get going and that match is good. This is a very good show on paper. I should not have slighted it the way that I did.
Yeah, and I'll be interested in seeing, like, Daiki being put into match two with the people that are usually in match two. I hope for a better future for him than this. I just hope that, like, again, old treatment of rookies. I'm just hoping that it's not going to kind of land there. I think Daiki has made some steps that I would like to see more of him than just teaming with Hoho against Kagetora and Punch and Problem Dragon. Why keep on calling him Punch Tomonaga?
I don't know.
Main event,
Triangle Gate Championship match, Gold Class, Minora, Benkei, and Doi versus Yamato, Dragon Kid, and Punch versus Kakuta, Yoshioka, and Daya. Who do you think is coming away with the belts there?
Oh, Gold Class. I think they're just going to put the belts back on them.
I would not. I think it's 60-40. I would not be surprised if Yamato and Dragon Kid and Punch walk away with these belts.
Yeah, like honestly, I just think that D-Courage, like at that point, you don't want to have your Dreamgate champion have another belt. Like that's, like, they're okay doing like Brave and Twin, but I don't think Dream should be a part of that. So it's really between those two, and I do still lean heavily towards Gold Class.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. It's been a while since we've had a match like that. Should be a good time.
Yeah, and I hopefully it's a traditional three-way and we get two falls. It just bugs me when they have one fall three ways.
I feel the same way.
But we did kind of gloss over a moment ago. It's the 25th anniversary of Toriumon next January 31st. And it isn't, even though that's going to be the 25th anniversary of the promotion, it's not the 25th anniversary for some guys, as we are going to have 25th anniversary memorial matches for Genki Horiguchi, Azushi Kanda, Susumu Mochizuki, and Kenichiro Arai, rematches of that first Toriumon Japan landing show from January 31st, 1999.
Yeah, fun stuff here. Right? You know, this has been a year where they've been doing 25th anniversary house shows. I, of course, celebrated Genki Horiguchi's 25th anniversary by talking about his El Numero Uno performance, which turned 20 years old this week. And I expect these two matches to be pretty emotional, and I expect them to be a lot of fun. And I sort of, you know, want to spend the last half of this podcast reminiscing about these four guys.
Yeah, so it's something where, at least with these four guys, it feels like that this is like that generation. The door's not closed, but the door is closing with this. And especially for someone like Kenichiro Arai, who is back off of Dragon Gate shows, it feels like it's nice seeing him here. But yeah, Case, I guess I'll hand it over to you. You kind of had a couple of questions for us to talk about with these four guys.
Yeah, so we just spent an hour talking about the here and now and the state of Dragon Gate. We're going to spend the next, you know, 25 minutes talking about the past, the nostalgia, the remember when. It's not the lowest form of conversation here. It's an interesting discussion to be had. We'll start off with Genki Horiguchi. I've got three questions for each guy, so I guess we'll actually go question by question here, not guy by guy. But when you think about Genki Horiguchi, what are the first match or matches that come to mind?
Weirdly for Genki, I think about Mad Blanky versus Jimmy's for Genki.
Oh, the unit disbands match?
Yeah, I kind of go for that one. El Numero Uno I view as like kind of like an overall event with that. And here's like the sad thing. As much as I enjoy the fact that he was King of Gate 2012, I could not tell you who he faced in that match.
Ooh, finals of King of Gate 2012. I'm going to have you look up the correct answer to this. My guess is that it was Akira Tozawa.
All right, I'm pulling that up right now. King of Gate.
Because the next year, I know the next year was Ricochet and Shingo in the finals. And right. The year before, King of Gate 11, I don't even remember who won that.
So you were correct. It was Akira Tozawa losing in 2012 to nice. Genki Horiguchi, just taking a battle axe to my heart. 2011, it was Hulk versus Kanda, but Kanda got the first title match, and they ran Hulk at Kobe World.
That's right. Okay, do you still have King of Gate 2012 pulled up?
Yes, sir.
Was that... Did they do the format where they did the semifinals and finals in Osaka that year?
I just have brackets. I don't have days.
Okay, let me look that up real quick. Now I'm curious just to see. I don't know who he wrestled in the semifinals, and I would like to know that as well. So Genki won.
Genki, he faced a Mochi.
Wow, I don't think I've seen that. And that was at Kobe. Okay, so they just did the finals in Osaka. They did Kobe the night prior with Tozawa and DK. And Genki and Mochi. I don't remember that Mochi match at all.
Yeah, and like I guess like the frustrating thing about that 2012 one, now that I'm looking at the bracket, was that Tozawa was kind of finally he beats Doi, he beats Yoshino, and he beats Dragon Kid, and it's like, okay, he's already taken out like the two top people of his generation at that point. Like, now is he going to finally take that step where he's kind of been lagging behind the rest? This was pre the announcement of the Big Six, but this was still in the era of Big Six, and it was Genki's night in the sun.
If anybody has this May 18th, 2012 show, please shoot me a DM. The fourth match on this show is Masato Yoshino and Pac versus Shima and Eita Kobayashi, and I would like to watch that.
Yeah, this was the King of Gate that Eita got in because he won King of Chop.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. And he beat KZ in the first round of the tournament to show you where KZ was at this point in his career.
Yep, absolutely. So what's your Ginky match that comes to mind?
So I go to Shima El Numero Uno 2003. The other one that comes to mind, and this is one of the other greatest matches in Dragon System history, and I would certainly put this, if not in my top three, then at worst my top five. I think of, and now I'm panicking just to make sure that Ginky was in this match, even though I know off the top of my head that he is, because, yes, of course he was. This was Kobe World 2005, the Open the Triangle Gate Championship match between Dofixer, and this was Ginky and Saito and Dragon Kid, and they wrestled the Blood Generation trio of Shima, Don Fuji, and Naruki Doi. I think this is one of the best matches and the history of Dragon Gate. It's a five-star match. And a lot of that was built on the back of Ginky sort of being the super worker in this match. Whereas when they would wrestle in Ring of Honor a year later, that match was built around Dragon Kid and wanting to make Dragon Kid be the star. I don't know if Genki's performance was as heavy-handed. I don't think they were going into this match hoping that Genki Horiguchi was going to come out of it a superstar. If anything, I would think they would want that for Ryo Saito. But Genki, just down the stretch, there's so few wrestlers in all of wrestling that are able to produce engaging closing stretches the way that Genki does. And this was him, to me, at his apex.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because when I think about like a best era of Genki, I think it is Dofixer era, right?
Yes, Genki with just a little bit of hair left over.
Yeah, it is basically where my hair is at right after a haircut, basically.
Yeah,
I would say I'm realizing that like no one else other than me knows what I'm saying about that. But yeah, it's something where I think afterwards, like you get into like his big heel run. Like, yeah, it's a kind of around that with Dofixer going face kind of at one point. But I think like that heel run, it took a lot to kind of get me back onto the Ginky Horiguchi train. But going into it and Dofixer felt like he was at his peak.
Yeah, I am not into heel Genki. That's always something that has just never really clicked with me.
Yeah, it just kind of stank. And it's one of those things which is kind of disappointing because I think, like, objectively, he had, like, one of the most insanely cool heel looks.
Yes, he did. And it just never matched up in the ring there. As for his opponent on this show, Yasushi Kanda, what match or matches come to mind when you think about Kanda?
I the match that comes to mind right now, and it's something where like I spent some time. I think it's the Twin Gate win. I think it's that's the one this year. I think that was the one that kind of put it over. Defeating Kongo was like the match for me, just because I think we're seeing his best work right now in his entire career.
Yes.
And it's something that I don't think I shout this from the mountaintops high enough that Yasushi Kanda in his 25th year of pro wrestling, after having one of the more traumatic injuries one could have and come back to wrestling 20 years beforehand, is doing some of the best work out of anyone on the planet. I mean, Case, Yasushi Kanda, 50th best wrestler working today?
Oh, he's going to be my top 50 for sure.
Yeah, I think it has to be him. And even though I think that actually now that I'm really thinking about it, it's the Ray Powerhouse Finals versus D-Courage is the match. Like, as much as I say it's a title one, it's really the match where they just went all out. And I will think about the opening with the plancha dies to that match for a long time.
I have a very hot take-ish question for you. I'm just curious as to where you stand on this.
Yeah, go ahead.
In the year 2023, and I am talking purely from a bell-to-bell standpoint, who has had a better in-ring year, Yasushi Kanda or MJF?
Oh, fuck you. Jeez. Honestly, you see, this is a tough one because I do enjoy someone who's able to work. And MJF in this face run has proven to be a hell of a worker. I'm a sicko for people not doing as much, doing as little possible and getting the biggest response.
He's giving like Boston Gardens 1985 show, and that is a compliment from some people, not a compliment from me.
No. Who am I enjoying entering more? It's Izushi Kanda. Yeah.
I've got four Kanda matches at 4 stars or higher this year, including one at 4 3/4 and one at 4.5. I have 2 MJF matches at 4 stars or higher this year. The 4.5-star match against Brian Danielson, and then a 4-star match against Adam Cole from June. I could not be lower on MJF as a personality, as a wrestler, as an entity right now. Kanda, meanwhile, having the best year of his career. So there you have it. Izushi Kanda, a better wrestler than MJF in the year 2023.
Yeah, and it's something where with Kanda, I'm instantly like, I know that this is his mountaintop, to steal a quote from Tim Storm. But I really do think like I now have like a certain energy towards him that I could not have any time before this. Like through the history of Open the Voice Gate case, Izushi Kanda's stock has never been as high as it has been right now.
No, let's table this discussion for later when we circle back to Kanda, because I think there's a point to be made here. But first I want to talk about Susumu Yokosuka, Susumu Mochizuki, Jimmy Susumu, if that's okay.
Yes, let's do it.
All right, same question. What are the matches that come to mind with Susumu?
So, 2 matches. The first one is Yokosuka Chome versus Amigo Tag. That's the original Jimmies versus Masato Yoshino and Sachi Okoboy. That's not as much a Susumu match, but it is, I think, the loudest that I've ever heard Cork and Hall, at least on video, was during that match. And then The further I get away from it, the more I hold the Kai versus Susumu Yokosuka match.
Great pull. Not one I thought about. Great pull.
Yeah, and it's something where I think that when you look at Susumu, he is someone that when you get into legacy, he is like we've talked about him being like the Tim Duncan of pro wrestling, and I probably owe you like $5 at this point for using that pull quote, but it's something where Susumu has just really, you could almost pick an era of his career. And I was like trying to think of like, okay, what's the him as a Jimmy singles match? I was like, yeah, he had like the insane match against Fumita. And then from there, I'm just like, oh, wow. I think that this guy is someone who has one of the more like shockingly deep match records out of anyone in wrestling working today.
Yeah, for me, Susumu, you got to look at the Shingo matches, and that is the 2008 match, that is the 3 matches in Dragon Gate UK, and those are the 2 matches from 2016, the Valentine's Day one and the one from early March at Champion Gate. I think he did his best work against Shingo. I think they're 2 of the greatest, you know, at worst 25 wrestlers. I might put Susumu in my top 20 at this point. Shingo, of course, a top 5 guy. They did their best work with one another. They are, maybe other than Shingo and Will Ospreay, they're each other's best opponents. The other one that I always feel like Susumu doesn't get the love for this match that he deserved is Susumu and Shima versus the Young Bucks from the first ever Dragon Gate USA show.
Yeah, that one was so much fun. Like, that is one that I think in a lot of ways, especially where the Young Bucks were, I think that was like a huge step forward for them. And then as well, like basically Susumu and Shima going like, we're going to get you guys over. It's okay. You know,
follow us and you'll be better off in 16 minutes.
Right. Yeah. Like I don't think like other than like rewind and rewatch, like thinking about like 2009 Young Bucks is one of those like properties. I'm like, oh, wow. Well, the path you will take to get to where you are now. And that's going to involve basically being paint by numbers by Susumu Yokosuka.
Look, I always tell you in private, I wish I had 28 hours in the day. If I had 28 hours, I could do everything I need to do in my life to pay bills and have relationships with people, but also I could do everything I want to do for this podcast. One of those would be a very, very deep, very, very long rewind and rewatch on the career of the Young Bucks, because let me tell you, by 2009, better than most tag teams to have ever existed. Not historically, but that run in 2009, that starts, you know, what would become a decade of pure destruction.
Yeah, like that's the thing. Like, I maybe didn't give them enough credit just then, because they were really on board by 2009. This wasn't like them and PWG at that point. Like, this was 2 years after doing significant Dragon Gate work.
Yeah, absolutely. Final guy on this list when we talk about the matches, before we get into Eras and Legacy real quick as we sort of round out this podcast, Kenichiro Arai, Arakan, your guy. What matches come to mind when you think about him?
So it's something where, and for me, it's very hard for me to kind of look at him outside of this guy's. I think his best work was done with Taku Iwasa as his tag team partner.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the best match of his career, and one that if you're someone, I don't know if this one is up on the network just because this was before they officially became Dangerous Gate. This is September 22nd, 2007. It is for the WAR International Junior Heavyweight Tag Team titles. It was Ryosuke versus Kenichiro Arai and Taku Iwasa Tozawa Juku. That's probably, I think, like his best tag match. But like just for like emotion wise, I'm going to go towards Gate of Destiny Zetterins versus Tozawa Juku.
I also have a Taku Iwasa match, although mine is with the aforementioned Susumu and Ryo Saito. This is from the famed No Ring Show in 2008 Summer Adventure Tag League, the Arakan and Iwasa versus Saito and Susumu match. Just a perfect example of showcasing Arakan and Iwasa's creativity, a tag team like none other, in a just excellent pro wrestling match.
Yeah, they had a 4.25-star match at the very least in a ring with no ropes, with
yes.
no
with, like, with no nothing.
Yeah, with just basically the canvas on the ground, and it's something with Arakan. I think like it's almost unfair, kind of how things kind of played out with him. That like I think he is someone who does not get enough credit for the Toriumon era through the end of Tozawa Juku, for how he was as a worker, just yes. because of the fall off him, and a lot of it starting with Deep Drunkers and that kind of becoming his character. But
go ahead. Sorry.
But I was just going to say, but leading up to it and really up to his heel turn joining Real Hazard, I think his Real Hazard stuff still was pretty strong. I think you're looking at then a decade of stronger work than people realize.
One of my biggest takeaways, and this was the start of the pandemic when I did this, so even, you know, it was already a few years ago, but when I went back and watched Dragon Gate 2005 from start to finish, one of my big takeaways was, oh, even by this point, like, Arai is a really good wrestler, and he really matters. You know, he's not a main event guy. He's not looked at on that level, but he's almost a bit of a gatekeeper. Like, you had to prove yourself against Arai to really mean something, and he's awesome that entire year.
Yeah, there's, like, a series of, and it's not just through, like, 2005, but there's, like, a lot of strong, like, grimy singles matches that he has that I don't think it's get enough credit.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's also a spot where he and Doi are wrestling at Kobe Chicken George, and Doi goes to throw a missile dropkick off the top rope, and Arakan blocks it with his head. And so Doi takes the bump, even though he kicked Arakan in the head. And that is one of the best spots ever.
I think that it is something with Arakan that no one got, like, especially out of that Toriumon, like, first through classes, no one got the vibe of who they were going to be for the remainder of their career immediately as quickly as Kenichiro Arai.
Yes. Well, I think when you look like that, decisions are made for you.
Fate has made your decision.
Yeah. All right. So real quick here. We already talked about this a little bit with Genki Horiguchi, but the best era of these guys' career, I guess we'll look at this as what unit were they in when they did their best work? Fire these off here. Genki, Kanda, Susumu, and Arakan, go.
All right. So as I said, Genki, Do Fixer, Arakan, Tozawa Juku, just because, though Shen M2K is up there. But like, I do think like he was like one of the few things that were really kind of working in those two M2K variants. Kanda, M3K.
Yep.
Like, I think that it is something that we give our flowers when things happen on this program, and we have to recognize the kind of career he's had. Susumu is the tough one, man, because you can make an argument that Typhoon era Susumu Yokosuka might be the best Susumu Yokosuka.
Didn't even cross my mind. I wouldn't say that, but I can't argue it.
But, like, going, like, maybe not, like, purely Typhoon, but Typhoon into Warriors, that like 07 through 09, or before all the shenanigans with Ryo Saito and the heel turns?
Yeah, I mean, even by that point, he's one of the best wrestlers in the world. And we're talking about trash bag pants Susumu, mm-hmm. where I think his look is so bad that it's almost distracting. But like, he's incredible. You know, he's just, oh my God.
Yeah, and he saw the singlet at some points.
Yeah.
It was an awful look, but it's really
bad.
Yeah. Well, what are your eras?
I would go Do Fixture for Genki, like you said. I would go M3K for Kanda, like you said. I would go with the Jimmies for Susumu. I will always think of him as a Jimmy, and maybe, you know, Saito and Genki might have owned that branding a little bit more. But when I think about the Susumu matches that I love, it's Jimmy's era Susumu. You know, that was his best stuff to me. And then for Arakan, I would either say Shin M2K or Final M2K. They were largely the same unit, or at least his presentation was the same, but that era of his career for sure.
He just looks so cool with a Tsukuban on.
You look great, yep.
Yeah, there was a few people who are more made to wear a Yokosuka jumper. It wasn't Susumu Yokosuka, it was Sua and Kenichiro Arai. I am mad that tag team never really happened.
Oh, Sua.
But he looks like he's going to go to, he was mentioning he's going to Susumu's anniversary show.
That's awesome. You know, we talked about that with Jay a few months ago, but just the return of Sua as a public figure. We talked a lot about, you know, depressing Dragon Gate things early on. I still think that is something that's just like, I don't know, I see Sua on my feed every day. We follow each other on Instagram, and I'll like look at, you know, some like shitty concert thing that I filmed and put on my Instagram, and I'm like, oh, Sua watched this video. That's insane.
Sua has a lot of thoughts about Postal Service and Atlantism album.
Like Sua knows more about the Chicago punk scene than he should, just because he's in he's like adjacent to my life now. It's wild.
No, he's going to be at the show on the 7th.
That's awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, but oh gosh, Sua and Arakan. I mean, doing it for us follically challenged guys out there. Just doing it for it.
All right, real quick, and you can answer these in a sentence or two. We don't have to go too long on these. But if I ask you, what's the legacy of Genki Horiguchi? What is your response to that?
The greatest crowd work guy of his era.
Yeah. Yeah. I think of him. I think Dragon Gate will be very lucky if they have someone to take over Genki's role and do it for another 25 years. And I think that person could be Kamei. I think that person, you know, could be Nagano or Daiki or, you know, somebody we don't know about yet. But I think sometimes people have the wrong view when they look at, you know, well, who's going to be the next Shima? Who's going to be the next Shingo? Who's going to be the next Mochi? And those things are crucial. Don't get me wrong. But I also think filling the void that Genki Horiguchi will eventually leave, and as slowly started to leave, is going to be incredibly crucial to this company's success.
Yeah, if Jackie Funky Kamei is 75% of the crowd work guy that Genki Horiguchi has been, I will feel happy.
Yep, I Dragon Gate will be in good shape if that happens.
Absolutely so. Kanda's legacy, I think you have to look at Kanda as proof that you can't write someone off.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think our answer to this would be drastically different if we had this conversation at this time last year, but he's rewriting history as we speak. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah, no. And it's something that like, I bet if you were to pull Yuzushi Kanda aside in 2006 and be like, all right, you're going to come back. You're coming back from this devastating cervical dislocation. Like one of his vertebra moved almost as far as it takes to sever his spine. It did not take any. And as we see now, he's living, as much as we could tell, a very fulfilling life. But he had to retire for about 2.5 years. And it was something that I was not around that time. But the going through records, going through results, going through like things like this, there was no like thought of Yuzushi Kanda coming back. But you can't count someone out. And if you went to Yuzushi Kanda right before his reunion or his return, where we were like, okay, so this Renaissance idea is going to ruin. It's not going to happen, but stick with it. 2023 will be your year. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? Arakan for you, Kay. So I want to hear, what's your Arakan legacy thought?
He was in the wrong promotion. You know, I think if Arakan has the same career, but he does it throughout 7 years of war rather than 25 years of Toriumon and Dragon Gate, I think there would be, and I use this term lovingly in this instance, but I think there would be perverts online that would tell you, is, you know, one of the most unheralded workers of the era. You know, this guy got it. It, you know, unfortunately for him, the people, at least in the English speaking world, that would have been his biggest supporters are the people that wrote him off because of the promotion that he worked in. I will always say this about Ark, and I can sum it up pretty easily. Whenever I see him, it puts me in a good mood.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, at least for me, I will say that some of that mood is bring me back to Zawajuku when I really fell in love with the promotion. But yeah, imagine if like GCW discover WAR Arakan.
Yeah. Oh my God. That'd be, he'd be huge there. He's looks like a fucking bum, just like the rest of GCW.
I mean, I would guarantee that he would probably have the cigarettes for backstage every show.
He could probably get a lot more backstage.
That is true.
Upstanding organization for sure.
Yep. Nope. For sure. Susumu. I feel like I should leave this one to you because I have a feeling what you're going to say.
Well, look, you know, when the history books are written, I don't know if he's the greatest Dragon Gate wrestler of all time, but he certainly has to be in the conversation. And I think the people that are above him, you're now talking about Masaki Mochizuki and Shingo and maybe Shima and maybe Yamato. But I think Susumu's one of the best people to ever do this thing that we all love. And he will never get the credit he deserves. It bothers me. I think it's unfair. I don't understand how he's not universally beloved and recognized. And, you know, there's no scenario in which I think he'd ever leave. You know, maybe if you went to New Japan, it would be a Shingo thing where people go, oh, I get it now. But it shouldn't have to come to that. You know, he is just one of the most talented people in this entire industry's history.
Now, Case, I have a first thought, worst thought question for you.
Okay. Uh-huh.
I want you to compare these two guys. Just, I'm going to give you their names. Think about their match catalogs. Think about their in-ring careers. Which one's better? Okay?
Uh-huh.
Susumu Yokosuka, Shima.
Well, I believe, and I will pull up my last greatest wrestler ever ballot, I might have had them next to each other. You know? The difference is going to be, you know, for as much as I've enjoyed parts of the last 5 years of Shima's career, he just has not had the continued success that Susumu Yokosuka would have had. So therefore, and as I confirm here, in 2021, I had Shima at 27th all time. I had Tomohiro Ishii in the middle at 26th, and I had Susumu Yokosuka at 25th all time. I could very reasonably talk myself into Susumu being a top 20 guy. Now, he would have to get through some tough names here. You know, I've got Okada, I've got Kurt Angle, I've got Jumbo Tsuruta, I've got Nick Bockwinkel and Riki Choshu ahead of him. But at the very least, I think Susumu belongs in that name of guys. And Okada and Angle and Jumbo and Bockwinkel and Choshu, I think Susumu Yokosuka fits in with that group very well. And historically, you've heard it here, Susumu Yokosuka has had a better career than Shima.
There we go. I don't have anything else to add, Case. I think that was something I'm going to have to go and reassess where I had the Dragon System guys on my GWE now. Like, we're at the midway point. It's time.
Hey, remember when we did a podcast with Alan like 3 years ago and I was like, I just can't put Brian Danielson in my top 10 because I think because I think that he's wasted a decade of his life wrestling in WWE and I don't enjoy him there. And even the stuff that everybody likes, like the John Cena match and the Triple H match, I don't like as much as other people. And then you watch him in AEW and go, oh no, this is the greatest wrestler ever. He did waste a decade of his life in a promotion that was beneath him, and he knew it was beneath him, and I was fucking right about that. Oh, God, I've been thinking about that a lot lately. He's doing the best work of his career now. He's like Yasushi Kanda.
Two guys having the best year of their career.
Oh,
Brian Danielson, Yasushi Kanda. I can't think of a better note to go out on. Case, anything else before we're out of here?
No, this was a blast. This was a good episode, Mike.
Yeah, this was one that I think we peeled back the curtain a little bit earlier today. We were trying to figure out what we were going to talk about. And I think that this was one of the more fun episodes we've done in a while.
Like and subscribe and share the podcast and donate on Red Circle. And I hope all of you have a great day.
Absolutely. And that's going to do it for us here. We're at Open Voice Gate. Case is at, in your case, I'm at Fujiheya. We'll be back with you next week. Take care.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener, Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, How many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.